This is episode 69 of the Next Year Now podcast.
Hey, I'm Jeff Sanders, author of the 5 a.m. Miracle book and host of the 5 a.m. Miracle podcast. If you want to find your own path to success, freedom, and happiness, then stop what you're doing right now and start listening to the Next Year Now podcast with my friend, Tom Hefner.
When I'm awesome at my job, I love my job. And when you really feel like you're digging deep to be your best self at work and produce the best stuff you can, it's just fundamentally satisfying and rewarding to our human nature.
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion. But we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business, and entrepreneurship. Today, we're speaking with one of the most popular podcast hosts in the world. I'm talking about Pete Mikitas and his podcast, How to Be Awesome at Your Job. His podcast is one of the best places to learn about improving your performance at work and in life. Today's conversation with Pete will give us a chance to pick his brain and learn the most important lessons and insights from over 400 episodes with some of the best experts and thought leaders out there. In our conversation, we'll be discussing the three most important habits we can adopt to be awesome at our job, the biggest mistake we make at work, and how to overcome this. The most surprising bit of advice he's ever received. Book recommendations to help you start every day well, and how to make the most of that day's work, and so much more. If you want to become awesome at your job, then one of the best ways is to become a leader or an expert in innovation and creativity. The people that can transform creative ideas into real products and real services that solve a real problem or that drive the bottom line for a company, those are the people that are rewarded extremely well. And that's where today's sponsor comes into play, because this week's episode is sponsored by the Innovation and Project Manager Mastermind. Joining this mastermind group will be the fastest way for you to learn the skills of innovation. And that's important because when you do that, you can make up to $15,000 more per year on average. And learning these skills of innovation is why I was able to double my salary in just the first year working on my own business. It's also why I feel confident that I can generate an innovative solution to any problem that a client throws my way. If you want to learn more about the Innovation and Project Management Mastermind Group and why it's so important to your success, then head over to tomhefner.com/mastermind. Don't take my word for it, though. Check out my testimonials and client list. I work with leading companies, companies like Accenture, Porsche Car, and Starbucks, just to name a few. Pete Mikitas is a friend, and he's an award-winning speaker and coach who helps professionals perform optimally at work. His work has been featured in the New York Times, Forbes, and Inc. So you know this dude is legit. Pete has delivered one-on-one coaching to over 700 leaders hailing from world-class organizations. I'm talking about organizations like Google, FedEx, Amazon, one of my personal favorites, Apple, Anheuser-Busch, and the United Nations, over 50 countries, and get this, love hearing this as a UPenn grad, every Ivy League university. He began his career at Bain & Company and currently hosts the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast. The show has been downloaded over 5 million times and consistently ranks as a top business show in Apple Podcasts. Pete, thank you for being here and welcome to the show, my friend.
Oh, thanks, Tom. It's a lot of fun to be here.
You know it, man. I can't wait for us to chat with Pete today because between his training work and podcast, he's just got a ton of goodness to share with all of us. But before we do, I think it's only proper that we should learn a little bit more about him and how his podcast came to be. All right, Pete, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to have to confess here. When I first heard the title of your podcast, we were at Podcast Movement 2018, that, you know, you remember it this year, I had a little bit of envy. I mean, awesome at your job. That's just like a fantastic podcast title. So talk, if you would, about how this podcast came to be. And then just as importantly for me only, but like, how did you come up with that cool title?
Oh, sure thing. Well, I think the first seeds of podcasting were sown when our mutual friend, John Paul, said to me, we were at some sort of conference, and he just said to me, and he said, I demand you start a podcast.
Yeah. That seems like something John Paul would say.
Yeah, it's so direct. Well, it's so funny. He's so quiet. Well, he's unassuming and humble and chill and cool. But so strong words. And so back then I was doing more speaking on college campuses. And so I thought, oh, okay, that sounds like fun to me. You know, there's a lot of people I'd enjoy talking to. So I made a mistake I think a lot of podcasters make the first time around. It was called the Student Leadership Podcast. And I kind of talked to anyone and everybody I thought was cool and somehow tried to connect that to student leadership. And so, you know, that didn't go that far, but I had a lot of fun doing it. Anyway, later on, I was doing some training for T-Mobile, and we put together a package that I ended up calling the Enhanced Thinking and Collaboration Training Series. And it was a hit in terms of, we saw some really great results in terms of people saving real time in terms of less, you know, waste and rework and whatnot. And so it was really cool to see the before after results there in hard numbers. And that, you know, one team at T-Mobile got it, then another. It's like, okay, we got something that's really working and resonating for people. And I was like, well, how can I get this out there into the world? It's like, let's do a podcast. I can interview people who have something to say about this sort of stuff, these universal skills. And some folks might choose to buy the training. Well, in fact, that hasn't really produced a lot of the sales of the training, but it has really taken off in terms of listenership and sponsors. And so there's a lot of opportunity in terms of where it will go. And I'm excited.
Nice. Well, you're obviously very successful at it, so you should be excited. I mean, you're at almost 400 episodes now. I'm at episode 58 just this past week, so a little bit ways to go there. But you've been interviewing some of the best thinkers, thought leaders, and experts around the world, all with this idea of helping us to be more awesome at our job. So I'm kind of curious, now that you're almost 400 episodes in, you know, if you were to give us a top three list, you know, that is the top three habits or practices that we can adopt to be awesome at our job, what would they be?
Well, it's hard to pick just three, but I certainly will. And the first one I think is easy and fun, at least for me, and that is to sleep. so you, with a positive psychology guy, no surprise, like there's all kinds of great research associated with how when you actually make the time and get the appropriate amount of sleep, you are thinking faster, sharper, more creatively, more expansive, less of that sort of panicked, under-resourced state of mind in which it's hard to, you know, really think broadly about what are your true priorities and what really needs to happen the most. And there's also recent research, which is, I love it when science just confirms what's like painfully obvious, at least for me, it's like, you are angrier when you don't get enough sleep.
Dude, I am it's like angry. I mean, I become this monster when I don't get enough sleep. And that's not good when, you know, you got three kids that are dependent on you.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think we have what other mistakes or excuses, like, well, you know what, other people need the 7 to 8 hours, but I can get by just fine on my 5 to 6. And, you know, the data suggests that very, very, very few people, maybe 1-2%, is that truly the case for. And the rest of us, it's like you might not even be aware of how sleep deprivation is impeding your ability to be awesome at your job and enjoy life. So I recommend, you know, all those practices associated with having a quiet, dark room, making the time to be there in the bed for at least 7 hours, not staring into the blue light of screens and using F.Lux or blue blocking shades if necessary. I take it kind of far. I wear earplugs and a sleep mask every night.
Oh, wow.
Just because there's noises every night, even from my wife, you know, or from, you know, baby who's mostly sleeping through the night now. He's got some of those, you know, little groans or just outdoor noise. Anyway, there's lots of things. And I think it really does make that impact. So I think that's one of the most enjoyable ways you could be awesome at your job is to just sleep enough.
I'm down with that one. What are two others?
You got it. Well, next up, you know, one of my favorites, and I guess I was sort of spoiled, you know, working at Bain, it's often on sort of top lists of Glassdoor or Consulting Magazine or wherever, like sort of best places to work. And so it's so funny as I talk to other people about their experience of jobs and work, it is like, oh, I guess I was in a really beautiful place in which they did a lot of things really right. And it's not that way across the board. But one thing that that we did and that apparently, again, maybe keep using the 1% number, maybe less than 1% of people do at work. And this comes from Mary Abajay. We had a podcast episode called How to Manage Your Manager. And it's just having a chat with the person you directly report to and just getting a sense for, all right, what really matters the most for you? Or, you know, if there were three things this year that would really be critical for me to nail and to just do excellently awesome, to blow out of the water, what would those three things be? Hey, how do you prefer to communicate? Do you want me to drop by? You want me to email? You want me to schedule a meeting? You know, how shall we do feedback? What are some things I do that annoy you or kind of irritate you? Or what do you find really delightful? Just getting that basic understanding of kind of what's most important, how do the people like to work and operate, and it just makes a huge difference. And I think a lot of times we just make assumptions, it's like about how other people think and feel and prioritize that may or may not be accurate, you know. And there's disconnects in terms of, oh, what I think is good work is just masterfully written legal briefs. One of my friends, you know, shared this, and what they think is good work is cranking out sort of more quantity for more clients. You know, it's like, oh, what a disconnect. It's great to kind of get that covered up front. And so I think some people have some resistance, like, oh, that's sort of awkward. That's a weird conversation. I don't know. We don't really have that kind of relationship. And it's only weird because you haven't done it yet. And it becomes, once you do it, I could tell you as a manager, whenever I've been on the receiving end of that, because, you know, people that I'm coordinating are working on the podcast, so they know that I think that's a cool idea. You know, it's a breath of fresh air. It's like, oh, well, thank you for asking how you can delight me. I'd be glad to share with you.
Design for delight, man.
Ooh, yeah, that's a great turn of phrase. So that's the other one, is just having that conversation, get super clear on what are your preferences and what are your priorities, boss, and to work accordingly.
Well, the bonus of that is if you go and do that with your boss, with your you know, your direct manager, is you'll have a sense for what kind of manager they are. Are they a good one or are they a bad one? Because, you know, a good manager should be very much interested in having that conversation with you, because that's one of the best ways you can better manage your people. And if they don't, then maybe that's a signal that maybe I should look elsewhere.
Totally. And I think you'd really be hard pressed for, you know, if you think about anyone who does anything for you, I'm thinking maybe your mortgage guy or a contractor or a plumber or, I don't know, massage therapists have to clean your house. Anybody that you pay money for a service, like if they take a moment and ask, hey, what's most important to you? Or like, what would you really prefer in terms of timing or how the work is done or priorities? It's sort of like, oh, you just appreciate it. You know, so I think it's going to be pretty rare that you find a real grumpy boss who's just like, I don't have time for this crap, Tom. You know, What delights me is you, you know, shutting up and getting all your work
you
done.
You shutting up and getting back to work, okay? That's what delights me.
I think that there's a rare bird that will say that.
I think we're both very fortunate to have good experiences there, because like you said, there maybe outside of our experiences there may be some other, but I think in general you're right. I have belief in humanity.
Excellent, me too.
Okay, so sleep, having one of these kind of more informative, thoughtful discussions with your direct supervisor. Well, what would be a third thing?
Yeah, I just think great questions are so powerful. And this could take a lot of flavors. And one of them is just clarification, you know, in terms of when you receive a piece of work, what are we really trying to deliver? When does it really need to be done? Who's the audience? What's the underlying, you know, goal or purpose of it? So just kind of like systematically asking more questions. One is to arrive at clarity. Another one is to arrive at a prioritization. And some of my favorite questions are, one of them is from The One Thing.
Jeff Woods, yeah.
What's one thing we can do such that everything else will become easier or unnecessary? And that's huge in terms of, hey, you know what? I keep filling out these forms to share this data. You know, I guess we could probably automate that some way. And it wouldn't be that hard. You know, we just, you know, get a Google form and bada bing, bada boom. Or, you know, we could probably outsource this. This isn't too tricky. You know, we could have even a college intern or a service or, you know, someone in the Philippines or elsewhere, you know, handle some of these things. That'd be really easy or unnecessary. Or when it comes to decision making, some of my favorite questions to really make sure you're doing the right research and analysis are kind of being hypothesis driven. What must be true for this to be a good move? And then how can I test that thing to see if in fact it's true? And I think if you just take that time to pause and think and ask the questions, and sleeping makes it easier to feel like you have that time as opposed to I must urgently do this thing, I'm running out of resources, you know, that feeling. It's huge to just ask those great questions so you have good clarity, you've got good priorities, and then you're cruising.
Nice. Well, let's take this from a different angle. We've talked about three habits or practices to help us be more awesome at our job. What's the biggest mistake that you see people or that you see us making at our job? What's the one thing holding us back the most?
Well, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, something that's come up again and again and again is this fear in terms of what's holding us back or sort of what is unspoken, because maybe you think someone is proposing an idea that is problematic or dangerous or just not a good move, you know, for the team. But you're like, well, you know, that person's in charge, so I guess I'll do it. Or you're kind of shy about offering feedback or giving an idea or a suggestion or just asking for what you need. I think if there's one thing that's holding us back in the workplace, it's fear. And there's been some great work with Google and talking about the power of psychological safety. Mm-hmm. And how that's huge for people to feel like they can contribute and really say what they really think. And I think at times the fear is justified. It's like, yeah, I have been sort of, you know, slapped down, you know, for speaking up before. And that was problematic. But I think if you really stop and think, how might I share this information in a way that it can be received and thinking about it from the other person's point of view and having that conversation maybe in a one-on-one way. So there's less defensiveness, you know, like, hey, I really want this project to be a success. We talked about reducing the bonuses for our sales staff. And I'm concerned that if we do that, they will suddenly find themselves quite unmotivated and may begin sort of checking out or looking for other opportunities elsewhere where they can find those bigger bonuses and commissions. And they go, huh, okay. So that came up from a guest that I was chatting with. And I think there's all kinds of times we think, not the wisest move, but to other people, they really don't have the information that you have. And I think it was S. Chris Edmonds, one of my guests, said it very simply. It's like, people see stuff that's dumb and they're not speaking up because folks aren't really welcoming it. So I'd say if you're a manager, make sure that you're welcoming it. But if you're kind of express some vulnerability, some concerns, ask people, hey, you know, what are you worried about with this? You know, what do you think might go wrong? And encouraging that. And if you're on sort of the individual contributor side, to find that courage and share it. And you may well be surprised that folks could say, you know what? No one actually gives me the straight, the straight dope, you know, the truth around here. This is refreshingly wonderful. So I'd say find a way to look at and disentangle that fear and follow John Mayer's imploring words to, and say what you need to say.
Say what you need to say. I'll yes and that and add my own experience to it. I think just having a little bit of awareness, a little bit of context for how the message is going to be delivered or how you're going to receive the message can make a world of difference. And I see this all the time at my organization with leadership and executives where they're always talking about, well, we want bold ideas. We want, you know, innovative ideas. And then the first time somebody suggests something that's out of the norm, out of the different from the way that we do things, it's like, whoa, hold on. How do you know that's going to work? That's crazy. You know, and you're like, well, settle down here. Let's pause for a moment. You can attack the idea. Don't attack the messenger. And I think to a certain degree, that's kind of what you're hitting on, in addition to some other things there. But I just think that that's an important piece too.
Absolutely. And to be thoughtful and proactive in that. It's like, you know, that's right. How do we know that's going to work? It's like, well, in a way, it's hard to know for sure. But, you know, one little thing we could do in order to get a sense if that could work is I can Google around and see if there are case studies of similar organizations doing that. And that worked out. One way is I could say, hey, I'm connected to someone on LinkedIn who's kind of faces that situation frequently. You know, maybe I can just have a quick chat with them and see if the prognosis is good. So I think sometimes that removes a lot of the fear in terms of, oh my gosh, this thing isn't going to work. It's like, well, you know, it may not work, but rather than letting that paralyze us and shutting it down entirely from the get-go, let's figure out what's one quick, simple, you know, low cost, low time step we can take to get some more clarity on if the odds look good.
Right. Well, look, you've had almost 400 guests. I got to ask this question because with 400 guests, you're bound to have some just something really interesting. What's been the most surprising bit of advice you've received from a guest?
I went through talking through 400 episodes. I recently kind of did a real detailed look at the data in terms of high levels of engagement on the episode and then high levels of downloading and identified six episodes across kind of the key topic areas that we cover. And I put them at the very beginning of the feed. So, hey, if you're checking out How to Be Awesome at Your Job, you know, look between episodes 0 and 1 at the very beginning, you'll find episodes A, B, C, D, E, F, which are, you know, some of the real favorites, which have some surprising bits in all of them. And so if I were to pick just one, I'm going to go with Chris Voss, who was the former lead hostage negotiator for the FBI. And this was surprising. You know, I think often, whether it's in sales or persuasion, we hear that we want to get yeses. And if we get a yes, we are making progress and we are kind of guiding the person we're chatting with down a pathway to agreeing ultimately with our final thing that we're after.
Into like, the funnel.
Like, Tom, would you agree that podcasts are a helpful medium?
Yes.
Like, well, yes. Yeah, but I think that naturally the response to that is a little bit of defensiveness. It's like, okay, where are you leading me? What are you tying me down to? Where is this going? And so you kind of put the other person in a bit of a defensive posture. Whereas if you try to get a no, then you kind of put them at ease. They feel like they've got their options are open. And so that's what they've done in a number of negotiation situations. It makes a world of a difference. And so one of his questions he asked, like, if you feel overwhelmed, like there's too much to do, the timeline is too short, you don't have enough money, you know, he recommends you ask the question of your boss, like, do you want me to fail? That sounds like bold and crazy. Like there's no way I could ask that. But what's interesting is you'll really disarm them in terms of folks will say, well, no, Tom, of course I don't want you to fail. It's like, well, I mean, I think that we're really at a high risk here. Like if we only have, you know, half a person working on this for 1 month, I think the odds are good. We're going to get in the middle of things and we're not going to be ready to launch it, you right. know, when we need it for the customer or kind of whatever the issue is. And so that is kind of disarming as opposed to saying, we need more. You know, there's no way, you know, what are we going to do? He's like, well, figure it out, you know, as opposed to, whoa, okay. getting the no is sort of disarming and gets it going. He has a really cool example of fundraising in terms of folks are saying, I think it was in a political context, and it was for Republican National Committee or something. Mm-hmm. And so you could say things like, do you think that, this candidate is a great choice? And they'll say, well, yes, we love him. As opposed to going the other way in terms of saying, do you think Hillary Clinton would be the ideal person to lead us forward? And they're like, heck no! you had fundraise from these Republicans. And then they're like, are you going to let her, do this and this and this? Like, not a chance. That kind of puts them in a different state of mind. It's like, oh, well, here's something I could do. And so there was some real data suggesting that the going for no pathway was actually more effective in terms of real dollars raised than the going for yes. So in terms of surprise, that really got me. And I thought,
that is surprising. Before this conversation, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Certainly. And he's just a fun guy, because he's, got all these cool stories and experiences to share. He's drawing from.
So there I was. Yeah. Yeah. He's probably got some cool stories. Well, I want to pivot back to something you talked about earlier. And this was your program, the Enhanced Thinking in Collaboration Training. Pete, can you share more about that program? What is it? How does it work? And why is it so beneficial for us as individuals and organizations?
Oh, sure thing. Well, it really is. It's not super complicated in terms of the stuff that we cover, but it's massively beneficial. So we talked about questions for clarification. And so, one module, we might spend 90 minutes talking about clarification, what to clarify, how to clarify, why to clarify, why we don't clarify, and then having some interactive exercises in terms of partner up, and one person has some information, the other person has to ask clarifying questions to try to get it all. And we see how much you got. Did you sort of check every box, or were there 8 pieces of information? You got 6 of them. So I think that's handy because it really reduces rework and coming back and delivering something. And they say, oh, actually, that's not quite what I wanted. Or using some of those hypothesis-driven thinking approaches we talked about, like what must be true for this to be a good move? And how do we test that? Or how do we generate more creative ideas? So it's fun. It's 90-minute sessions over the course of a number of weeks. There's about 10, 11, 12 of them. We customize it a bit. And that's what's so fun is we've seen a real reduction in terms of time spent at doing rework or unnecessary meetings or unnecessary analyses to the tune of about 1.4 hours per person per week, which can really add up if you think about what people are making on an hourly basis. And so that's something I've been really proud of in terms of, hey, this is a real ROI we can show, which can sometimes be hard to do in training type programming.
I hear you. I do innovation training programs with individuals and organizations. It doesn't matter whether it's engineering, banking. And one of the things that they want to know is like, what's the ROI? And especially in innovation, where sometimes the things are a little bit more downstream, you can't point to an immediate ROI. So if you can, that's huge.
Absolutely. It's huge. And I think like with organizations, often that is like the biggest cost is employees. And I think it's common not to think about it if they're sort of like salaried. But no, the way I think about it is really every hour of time, has a cost. And if it's a person earning $100,000 all in and with health insurance and that, those benefits are a big piece of it.
Yep.
Then we're talking about, $50 an hour. And it's sort of like it's, for meetings, especially, it's like, okay, you're going to get 6 of these people in a room for an hour. It's like, well, hopefully you're going to be producing $300 worth of valuable goodness. Otherwise, if you've produced nothing, you've sort of burned $300. And would you do that with a contractor or a third party service? You probably wouldn't. You'd be a bit more cautious.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why I love Jason Fried. He's the CEO from Basecamp. Do you ever use Basecamp? Mm-hmm.
I haven't used it, but I've heard of their philosophies of rework and such.
Yeah, he talks a lot about that, but also this idea that, in some ways, we work too much. He said, there's no reason why you should be working more than 40 hours a week, in part because there's a lot of wasted work. There's a lot of rework. So yeah, 100% agree with you there.
Absolutely. But that goes by kind of the sleeping and the resting stuff. And there have been real studies associated with, say, video game creators. They will often, it was common, I don't know if it still is in the industry, to have it sort of like a crunch time. Sort of is like, all right, it's just expected that the month before the release, we're going to work insane hours. And they've discovered again and again that their just rework has to happen because you make a mistake that needs to be undone when you're not doing your best thinking at 8 p.m. on a Thursday when you've been hustling, 12-hour days after day after day.
Mm-hmm. Pete, if we wanted to work with you, be it individually or as an organization, what would be the best way for us to do that or to contact you, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, thanks for asking. Well, you can email me anytime, pete@awesomeatyourjob.com, or check out the website and what's going on there at awesomeatyourjob.com. And yeah, it'd be fun to chat. You'll see how I might be helpful.
Awesome. Pete, before we move on, is there anything else that you'd like us to know? Something I haven't asked you about, but you're like, look, this is really important.
Well, I just think it's interesting to hit the why for a bit. It's like, why does it matter to be awesome at your job? And I think that the why is huge in terms of many times it is about life and death. Like if you work in food service, people can get sick. If you work in healthcare, absolutely. You are making pharmaceuticals or medical devices or sort of hands-on direct care with patients. If you're in transportation, helping out on a bus or a train or a plane, then people really can die if people are having tremendous mistakes and not being awesome at the job. And so that's one thing. But even more so, if you think about the customer and the user and what you're creating in the world, it really matters if folks have a great experience or a frustrating experience, which creates some bummer moods, which, as in your positive psych world, you see, will ripple out to folks as you're broadcasting your positive or your negative emotions. And even for your own experience of work, one of my listeners said, when I'm awesome at my job, I love my job. And when you really feel like you're digging deep to be your best self at work and produce the best stuff you can, it's just fundamentally satisfying and rewarding to our human nature. So I would just encourage you. At times, I think we enter a coasting mode or we're just tired and it seems like too much to push. Well, maybe, hey, get a good night's sleep and then reconnect to your why and pursue the awesomeness because it's a much funner way to live.
Love that. It's time for my favorite part of the show. This is where we talk about one of the very best habits we can adopt today, and that is the habit of reading. Pete, I want you to think about the books you've really enjoyed over the years, or maybe books that have impacted you deeply. What are the two or three books that stand out for you?
Well, one we mentioned, it is The One Thing, and that's a book that covers that question. What is one thing we can do such that everything else will become easier or unnecessary? I think that's so excellent just to get you thinking about prioritization. And it has some nice little graphics and it's easy to read and it's segmented up nicely. And so I think that is a huge one in terms of just sort of game-changing impact and getting you thinking in those directions. Beyond that, there's so many good books to try and zero in on. I would say in the world of being awesome at your job and enjoying it, I think Carolyn Webb wrote a really nice one called How to Have a Good Day. And it's all about sort of the insights from neuroscience associated with how good days are not so much random. I woke up on the right or the wrong side of the bed, but there are some key things that you can do that will impact it in terms of your attitude, in terms of sleeping, and those. It's a nice research-based compilation of a whole lot of stuff that achieves the goal of having a good day.
Love that. Here's one for you if you haven't read it. It's called The Miracle Morning, and it's by Yeah, okay. So you're familiar with that one. That's another good one along the same lines. Some goodness in there.
Oh, certainly. We had Hal Elrod, the author, on the show, and that was a popular episode in terms of he was talking about those key morning habits that make a world of difference. And he's like, why not do all of them?
Yeah, Pat Flynn talks about him saying he, when he read that book, it completely changed his life and the way that he structures his days. And so it's a hugely impactful book. And much like Carolyn Webb, if you can do those things to be more intentional and to have a good day, well, why not?
Absolutely.
Pete, final question. What are you working on now that really excites you?
Well, you know, I'm working on, with the podcast, just making a better experience for listeners. We've already have all the transcripts of every episode, so it's full text searchable on the website, so that's cool. But just recently, we got every episode tagged by its topic covered, the subtopic covered, and even the competencies as defined by Corn Ferry, who does a lot of work in talent development, that is covered in the episode. So I'm excited that now, that by the time this releases, the website is just a lot more useful in finding with 400 episodes, which one is really the best for you. So that's getting me really fired up, is that it's a better experience to get just what you need when you need it. And I'm also excited about, it's still in process, but kind of creating the ultimate training program for being awesome at your job. And that's still sort of in flux. But I'm very excited about how it's going to emerge with tons of listener input in terms of experience and design to delight, to make it delightful. So that is going to be released to the world in the mid to late part of 2019. And I think it'll be pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, I hope you come back on the show to talk about it when you've released it, because I know I'm excited about seeing that. And I know some other people that would be as well.
Oh, thank you.
Pete, that's all I have. Thank you so much for being here today. I really, really enjoyed our conversation. Lots of goodness that I'm taking away, and I know the rest of us are as well.
Cool. Thank you. Good times.
This is just a reminder that today's episode was sponsored by the Innovation and Project Management Mastermind. If you want to drastically improve your pay, learn to be creative, and most importantly, how to transform creative ideas into real innovative solutions, then head over to tomhefner.com/mastermind to connect and learn more. You can connect with Pete online through his website, awesomeatyourjob.com, and on Facebook at facebook.com/PeteFans. All the links and resources Pete and I discuss can be found at the page created just for this episode. You'll find it all at nextyearnowpodcast.com/69. And finally, just a reminder, if you like the show and enjoy learning from our guest each week, please consider giving us a rating and a review on iTunes. It helps us stay relevant and findable by listeners like you. That's it for today. I'll see you next time.